Coming up, Fred DeSam-Lazaro reports on the consequences of El Salvador's total ban on all abortions, no legal exceptions. And Lucky Severson on the growing number of Mormon missionaries, more than 80,000 of them now, trying to combat what one church official calls the world's growing level of wickedness. Also, whirling dervishes, part of the Islamic mystical tradition of Sufism.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. In his first World Day of Peace message, Pope Francis said peace can be fully achieved only when people see each other as true brothers and sisters. And he said that means addressing growing economic disparities, especially big salaries for some that leave only crumbs, he said, for the poor. This has been a common theme of his papacy. Earlier this week, Francis urged a global wave of prayer to end hunger by 2025. On Tuesday, people around the world held prayer events at noon their local time as part of the campaign. In Washington, interfaith leaders gathered in the Capitol and prayed that U.S. policies would help the poor and vulnerable. Francis's popularity continues to soar. This week he was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. Many religious groups held special services to mark the one-year anniversary of the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, which killed 20 students and six adults. At the Lutheran Church of Reformation in Washington, Newtown families, clergy, and community leaders honored the victims and vowed to continue working for stronger gun control laws. Since the Newtown tragedy, a coalition called Faiths United to Prevent Gun Violence has been mobilizing at the national and state levels. Religious leaders around the world were also part of remembrance services honoring Nelson Mandela. Many praised the former South African president for pursuing forgiveness and reconciliation in the wake of oppression. In Johannesburg, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, and Hindu leaders jointly led memorial prayers. Congregations in the U.S. also paid tribute to Mandela and pledged to continue his legacy. In the Central African Republic, Muslim and Christian leaders appealed for an end to spiraling sectarian violence. More than 500 people were killed in the past week alone, many of them children. The Central African Republic has been torn by fighting between Christians and Muslims since a largely Muslim coalition of rebels seized control of the government in March. The violence has displaced more than 400,000 civilians, 10% of the country's population. The struggle over abortion continues in many countries. Some nations permit abortion in cases where there's been rape or incest or where the mother's health is at risk. But in El Salvador, with its strong Catholic heritage, all abortions are against the law. We have a report from Fred DeSam-Lazaro on some of the consequences of that ban.
Elias Cruz, an agricultural laborer, took the day off recently to visit his daughter's pro bono attorney.
I was just talking to her. She feels as if her case has been abandoned. They didn't investigate as they should have to get concrete evidence.
19-year-old Glenda Cruz was recently sentenced to 10 years in prison after her pregnancy ended under suspicious circumstances, a sentence lawyer Dennis Munoz Estanley plans to appeal.
Something that I've always told her is that she is not alone in this case. Glenda has never been alone. Maybe it's because she's in prison that she thinks she is alone.
Across town at the state's medical legal department, which advised the prosecution, Dr. Jose Fortin Magaña saw a very different case.
She is in prison because of an abortion. It's absolutely false what she says. What happens is when someone murders someone else, he or she doesn't turn up on the TV and say, "I'm guilty of murder." Maybe there has been a mistake, but in most cases, they are guilty.
Glenda Cruz is one of several cases that have come under public scrutiny in the debate over one of the world's most stringent abortion laws.
Since 1997, abortion has been illegal in El Salvador with no exceptions, which had once existed for cases such as rape, incest, or a threat to the mother's life. Dozens of women have been prosecuted for illegal abortion, in some cases for aggravated homicide.
The change reflects the strong influence in this largely Catholic nation of the group Sí a la Vida, or Yes to Life. It is closely tied with a church that has long held that all human life is sacred and that it begins at conception, a statement that was added to El Salvador's constitution in 1998.
We cannot accept any law that goes against life. It is not a question of faith and religion, but of humanity.
Members of El Salvador's Obstetrics and Gynecology Association, which opposes the law, say it's a question of clinical realities, like women brought in after unsafe or botched abortion attempts.
In the public health system, patients coming in after an abortion, whether self-inflicted or septic, providers were told they had to report the patients for prosecution.
Such reporting violates the doctor's oath to preserve patient confidentiality, but legal medical officer Dr. Fortin Magaña says those fears are exaggerated.
The statistics of the doctors in jail because of the crime of abortion is zero.
In truly dire circumstances, he says, doctors can save a mother's life. He points to a case last summer of a 22-year-old woman, one that drew international attention. Known only as Beatriz, she was suffering from the immune disease lupus and from kidney failure. She was pregnant with a severely deformed fetus that could not survive outside the womb. El Salvador's Supreme Court denied Beatriz's petition for an abortion, a decision that drew widespread protests. The court upheld a recommendation of the medical legal office.
The Department of Legal Medicine said Beatriz wasn't at imminent risk, and we were right, because time went on and she continued with her pregnancy. It means what they said was a lie. If it were true, then Beatriz would have died. The baby was delivered, he lived for 8 hours, and then he died.
Beatriz's baby was delivered by cesarean section, a procedure that, in Fortin Magaña's view, respected its right to life. But Beatriz's doctors argued that the weeks-long ordeal harmed her health and caused needless suffering.
Thank God there were no more complications with Beatriz. She was a very public case for everyone here, but there are many other patients that cannot be like her.
As an example, the obstetricians say they cannot intervene to preserve a woman's health, even if her pregnancy has no chance of coming to term.
The law does not permit us to terminate pregnancies that are unviable, such as ectopic pregnancies, as long as there is a fetal heartbeat. Often there is a rupture and hemorrhage, and often women die from the shock.
For some women whose pregnancies have ended in later stages, things can become especially complicated. About 9 years ago, Cristina Quintanilla, 18 at the time, was close to term when she says she suffered a miscarriage.
I sat on the toilet, and I felt a strong pain. I tried to grab the doorknob. I fell. Next thing I know, I'm in the hospital.
Quintanilla's mother called the police, a common practice here because ambulances are unreliable, a call that she thinks was construed as a complaint.
It was very depressing when I realized what I did. We were scared that she could die. Then I went to investigate, and I found out that it was totally opposite. It was very prejudicial because the authorities misinterpreted it.
I was dizzy because of the anesthesia and blood loss, and I saw a man wearing blue asking for my name. He said, "You're under arrest for the murder of your child."
Quintanilla was sentenced to 30 years for aggravated homicide, even though she says the autopsy was ruled inconclusive. Her sentence was eventually commuted to time served, 4 hellish years, she says.
Yo me sentía mal.
I felt so terrible because the prosecutor would keep pointing at me and saying, "She killed her baby, she killed her baby." If you go to prison for an abortion, they beat you up and they put you in isolation so you don't even see the sun. And it's not just me. There are other women in there.
Lawyer Munoz Stanley represented Quintanilla and hopes he can win a similar commutation for Glenda Cruz.
I don't believe she's capable of what they've accused her of. She's not violent. She was raised with Christian morals.
Cruz Benavidez says his daughter was a victim of domestic abuse, that her conviction was based on evidence from her estranged boyfriend. We tried without success to reach the prosecutors. Bishop Aquino says the conservative tide is a direct reaction to international groups that have tried to impose liberal social legislation that's counter to the culture and values here.
They want to promote therapeutic abortion. This would open the window to other kinds of abortions, then same-sex marriage and adopting children by homosexuals or lesbians.
Recent polls show most Salvadorians oppose abortion but support some exceptions. However, with elections looming next year, political analysts say it's doubtful there'll be any changes to the laws governing abortion anytime soon. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Fred DeSamlazaro in San Salvador, El Salvador.
At a time when many denominations continue to lose members, the number of people in The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, continues to grow. There are now more than 15 million Mormons worldwide. One reason for the growth is the enthusiasm of the more than 80,000 Mormon missionaries. Lucky Severson reports from Utah and Mexico City.
Off they go, two by two, in search of converts to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. You know some of them. Presidential candidate John Huntsman was a missionary in Taiwan. Mitt Romney served a mission in France. Since the time of its first modern-day prophet, Joseph Smith, about 180 years ago, Mormons have sent over 1 million missionaries throughout the world.
It is an international church.
In fact, you have more members outside of the country than inside?
See.
Steve Allen is a managing director of the church's missionary department, which has seen a huge increase in the number of missionaries in just over a year.
We had 58,500 missionaries in October of 2012. We've shot up to over 80,000, almost 82,000 today serving.
There's a reason for this growth spurt of Mormon missionaries. The church's president and current prophet, Thomas S. Monson, announced last year that young men would now be eligible to go on missions when they are 18 instead of 19, and young women can serve when they turn 19 instead of 21.
God is hastening his work. He's speeding it up. We have a sense that there's an urgency about spreading the message of the gospel across the world. I think it would be very safe to say that this was inspired from heaven.
The number of baptisms per missionary has declined in recent years. Allen says it's because of two factors. One is that missionaries spend more time to make sure new converts stay converted. The other is...
I know that the world's becoming a tougher and tougher place. And the level of what we would refer to as wickedness is growing tremendously.
This is the church's main missionary training center in Provo, Utah. There are 14 other training schools throughout the world teaching 55 different languages. This is a class in Mandarin. The female missionaries are referred to as Sister. After spending 9 weeks learning Mandarin, Sister Rolfing is going to Taiwan.
Well, I've always planned to go on a mission since I was a little girl.
Really?
So with the age change, it just really made it more convenient to get to go a year earlier.
Women in the church are not allowed to hold the priesthood. The young men are. They're given the rank of elder, which becomes their first name throughout the mission. Elder Russell is going to Canada.
But why are you learning Mandarin if you're going to Canada?
I guess there's a sizable population up there that, I mean, everyone deserves to hear our message, so we'll go worldwide wherever they are.
This group is leaving soon for Ukraine. First, they had to be considered worthy of serving a mission.
We submit our papers, which is just a kind of a resume, and then the brethren, the Quorum of the Twelve, they sit down and they pray about it, and they look at our picture, and they decide through inspiration where we should serve our mission.
Missions are all about self-discipline. There's an enormous amount of self-discipline out there. No TV, no internet per se. They call home twice a year on Mother's Day and Christmas Day. They communicate by email with their families once a week, and they work hard. It is hard, hard work. 12-hour, 14-hour days.
In this small community in Mexico, you'll find Elder Lopez from Pahrump, Nevada, a convert, and Elder French from Utah, walking about 15 miles each day, spreading the gospel to anyone who will listen. Each and every morning, for up to 4 hours, they're studying the gospel. Families from the U.S. are asked to pay $400 a month. These two work to help pay for their missions.
We always have to wake up at 6:30. We have like 4 alarms just to make sure.
No sleeping in.
No sleeping in. If our companion tries to sleep in, we pour cold water on him.
You seriously?
That's what I do.
The week before they show up here, they're going around in flip-flops and gym shorts and T-shirts.
Yeah.
And here, they're all in white shirts and ties.
Carl Pratt is president of the church's missionary training center in Mexico City. In his professional life, he's a lawyer. The language school here is extensive and can handle up to 1,200 students. Outside the campus is a world alien to many young missionaries. Cultures in this part of the world are steeped in Catholic tradition. Elder Riffle from Fresno, California, will be serving in Ecuador. Is this something you always wanted to do?
Nope. It's not.
So why are you here?
Because the idea of having an empty seat in heaven troubles me.
Sister Weymouth is from Sweet, Idaho.
I decided to come on a mission because if it wasn't for missionaries, I probably wouldn't be here because my dad is a convert.
Sister Brunsdale is fresh out of high school.
Last year, right after the announcement, I was like, oh no, that means I can go. And then I was like, oh wait, that means I can go. And I got super excited, and I got an answer from God that this is what I'm supposed to do.
Sister Brunsdale is among many here learning Spanish only to go back to the U.S. to proselytize Latino residents. The church is devoting a good deal of attention to Spanish-speaking populations, even when they're in pockets in the U.S. Are there any countries in particular that you're really zeroing in on, you'd really like to make some inroads?
Yeah, the United States of America, North America. We'd like to make more inroads here.
Inroads like the churches made south of the border. Mexico in particular has been fertile ground for Mormon missionaries.
When you went from 50,000 members in 1963 to 1,300,000 now.
Although the fundamental message of the Mormon church has changed little over the years, what has changed is the packaging. Not that many years ago, prospective converts heard more about Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon. Today, it's first and foremost about Jesus Christ, which is an easier sell to other Christians, like all the Catholics here in Mexico.
The Mexican people are very warm, very receptive.
Dana Call, a farmer by trade, is president of the Mexico City North Mission. He's in charge of 146 missionaries, like Sister Martinez, a third-year medical student from the Dominican Republic, and Sister Sandoval from Mexico, who was studying to be a civil engineer. She says her mom was afraid when she heard she was going to the dangerous big city, but sometimes it seems to her that people are more afraid of her.
Some people, when they see us, they run to the other side of the road. Others want to know more.
On this day, they're visiting a member who needs help cleaning her house, also part of their calling. On their way here, they knocked on some doors, something that is not that common anymore.
Well, no, we don't talk about door-to-door, although missionaries are certainly free to do that. But we talk about contacting on the streets, and we talk about mostly working through the members, that the members would invite their friends to visit with the missionaries.
It was a member that referred Elders Lopez and French to this meeting with a potential convert.
We talk to members. We ask people if we're going to the store to buy something. We ask the clerk at the store, or we ask the person working there, who do you know that needs help in their life in this moment? Who do you know that could benefit from having a little more of Jesus Christ, our Savior, in their lives? And they tell us.
The Mormons, like many churches, have seen active members stray from their congregations. Shoring up the wayward is now part of a missionary's job.
President Monson calls it the rescue. Go and get and find those who have strayed and bring them back.
Since 1970, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has grown from 3 million to over 15 million members worldwide. And these young men are determined to add to that number. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Mexico City.
Like other major religions, Islam has its own mystical branch, Sufism, which teaches many ways to experience spiritual union with the divine. One of those paths, dating from the 13th century, is dance, specifically the dancing of those known as whirling dervishes, who were followers of the poet Rumi. The Smithsonian Institution in Washington had a symposium on Sufism that included dervishes from Turkey. Our guide was Manjula Kumar, a Smithsonian program manager.
There are stories about the origin of the whirling dervishes. And one of the stories is Rumi was walking walking down, and he heard the call for prayer. And he was so overwhelmed, he was so almost in an ecstasy to hear the call for prayer, that he started moving around. And he called it a divine ecstasy. And since then, his followers started making this whirling. It's creating an atmosphere to pray, and it's an offering. I think it's just a physical way of expressing this love for the divine, and that's how they kind of twirl. And in the whirling, it becomes a meditation. It's an ecstatic state. But over the years, it's become an art form. They do not call it a performance. I would not call it a performance. It is a spiritual offering. This became a symbol of believing in beyond religion, beyond the rituals, beyond the fundamental beliefs of Islam. It continues to evolve. It continues to grow. But I want to just make a very clear distinction that everyone today will say Sufism, the term, is not a religion. It is a philosophy, a belief. And the commonalities, whether one is a Muslim, a Hindu, a Jew, or a Sikh, or Christian, the commonality is the looking for love, peace, harmony, of coming together in unison as a voice.
There was a happy ending story this week in Paris. An auction house put up for sale 24 ceremonial masks from the American Hopi and Apache tribes. The Native Americans argued that the masks were sacred and to sell them would be blasphemy. But the auction went ahead, and an unknown bidder bought the lot for $530,000. But then the Annenberg Foundation of Los Angeles said it was the anonymous buyer, and it will return all the masks to the tribes. Finally, on our calendar, Christians around the world continue preparations leading up to Christmas. Guatemala celebrated a centuries-old tradition known as the Burning of the Devil, where people set effigies of the devil on fire as a symbol of purification. Festivities are also underway in Bethlehem, the traditional birthplace of Jesus, where this week there was a rare Middle East snowstorm. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. And visit our website, where there's always much more and where you can listen to or watch each of our programs. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, music from a tribute to Nelson Mandela at Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.